Hey, this is post-production Galen. This is part two of a two-part episode, so if you haven't listened to part one, we advise you to do so. Otherwise, thanks and enjoy the show.
I'm connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web. Computer today.
Computer.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Next is Don't You Know Who I Think I Am, which was my favorite when I was a kid. This is a really fun one. It has some clapping. Gotta love the clappin'.
Gotta love the clappins.
This is another one where Patrick Stump changes up the way he sings the chorus, and I love it. The "we only want to sing you to sleep," it like in the first chorus it goes up, and the second one it goes down. Like, you've already heard this before. He's just repeating it. It's like,
yeah.
"We only want to sing you to sleep."
In your bedroom speakers. I think that another consistent theme, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, a consistent theme is sort of the bedroom as an image of like being very like as an image of like intimacy, which
sure.
I know that's also just a thing that, you know, in general, but like specifically the way they use it in a number of their songs is sort of like this idea of the bedroom being where, you know, you are sort of your truest self. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, it's the bedroom is the only place that like a teenager has to themselves that they can customize and individualize.
Exactly.
And that was a major component of so much media from the 80s to the 2010s. It kind of stopped around the 2010s, I feel like. But so much media geared towards teenagers viewed the bedroom as the sacred place. See also like fucking Labyrinth. Jim Henson's Labyrinth,
yeah.
Adam's Song by Blink-182. It's just such a huge thing. And so the bedroom is not just a, you know, sexual reference.
Yeah.
But it also is the just general intimacy of the place that is sort of your soul, the inside of your heart. Also, I gotta say, I did listen to music to help me fall asleep when I was younger. And
yeah.
You bet I had this song on a mix CD.
Nice.
So the bedroom speakers was really that. I guess it's also that for a lot of teens, the bedroom is where they would listen to CDs they buy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they want to listen to them by themselves. So yeah, that line's great. It's another one of the band kind of referring to themselves as a band, being very self-aware in terms of their relationship with the audience.
Yeah. I like that line. I like that line, and I specifically shout it out because I think, once again, I think that the album plays around with both a band as sort of like, you know, a comfort object and a band as, you know, an object of corruption.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, it is both comfort of, you know, we want to be there for you, but also sort of like it has this air to me of like, we want to put our hooks in you so you can't get away.
Mm-hmm.
Not like intentionally aligning with that. I don't think that they are doing that unintentionally.
Yeah. I gotta love the line, you know, "we walk the plank on a sinking ship."
Yeah.
In response to, "they say quitters never win." Like, it's this sort of, this admission, like, yeah, this isn't gonna last, so we're going to get out while we're ahead.
Yeah.
It's not quitting, it's quitting while you're ahead. Also, so I will say, I think one of the weaker parts of this song is the first verse has the, like, the bit about money, but then the last line is the "I'm just a painter and I'm drawing a blank," which is, like, fine enough as a one-liner, but it's so disconnected from the rest of the first verse.
Yeah.
Not to mention it's the one where Patrick Stump holds the first note for an entire beat, an entire bar, I mean, four measures. It's where, like, the one-liners kind of feel weird. Sometimes Hum Hallelujah gives me that same feeling of, like, it feels like the one-liners are a bit too disconnected from each other. And I think that's sometimes a strength and sometimes a weakness.
Yeah.
Next is Afterlife of a Party, which is one I didn't really get as a kid, but now I love it. It has the, like, news bulletin intro.
Yeah.
Which is great. So this is a good example of how they use repetition. So, Afterlife of a Party, Don't You Know Who I Think I Am, and Take Over the Breaks Over intentionally broke the repetition by changing the way he sings, but Afterlife of a Party does repeat it pretty much, like, note for note, and the chorus itself is two lines that are repeated multiple times, the "cutting it loose, watch you work the room," and I think that's, like, so cool. This is sort of something they did in Dance Dance, was they use the repetition of the phrase "dance, dance" to sort of be a very kinetic lyric about dancing.
Yeah.
That by repeating dance so much, it's like you are just dancing constantly. And similarly in this one, I feel like the cutting it loose, watch you work the room is like doing a planned routine. Even though you're dancing, it's ultimately a routine done for other people that you have practiced.
Yeah.
And the instrumentals do a cool thing where like the cutting it loose has its own sort of build up instrumental, and then it breaks down in the watch you work the room, but it's still a repeated beat. Like every beat has sort of the same sound. It's not like it's written where the measure is a contained phrase, not phrase. I don't want to mess up my music theory terms, but usually the measure at the very least will be written as a one sort of section, I guess, to be repeated.
Yeah.
But it feels like every beat is repeated in this chorus. Essentially, it just uses a lot of repetition. I like the bridge has a really cool key change. I love the lyrics of this one. Like the I'm a stitch away from making it and a scar away from falling apart.
Yeah. That is the opening line, and it's again fucking banger.
Yeah. It's very cool. It's written from the perspective of like somebody watching upon somebody else, almost like it's the audience watching Fall Out Boy.
Yeah.
It's the response to the previous song, or specifically Hum Hallelujah, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Next is, okay, so this is, I think, my vote for Fall Out Boy's least intelligible song, Carpal Tunnel of Love. So this song is super interesting. You're gonna feel so old.
Oh boy.
The music video for Carpal Tunnel of Love is fucking Happy Tree Friends.
Oh right!
Like, I don't just mean like it's literally an entire Happy Tree Friends cartoon where the band appears briefly as like cameos of their Happy Tree Friends sonas, but it's just the characters from Happy Tree Friends doing the thing they normally do, which is dying in very graphic ways, set to the music of Carpal Tunnel of Love. That's a indicator of how internet focused Fall Out Boy's brand was.
Happy Tree Friends is like a white whale to me, where I watched one episode when I was very young, got very scared because obviously I was like 10 or whatever, and I was like, this is scary. And nowadays I'm like, I'm sure if I went back, it wouldn't be scary, and honestly, it might be funny. But like, I'm so like, do I really want to subject myself to Happy Tree Friends?
Apparently my brother was scared of it when he was little. But I never really felt that sort of trauma or shock from it.
Yeah.
Even when I was a kid. Maybe it's because I was already kind of desensitized to like YouTube poops and shit. But like, true. I don't know. Even like the violence or like the gore and stuff never really got to me. So I'm just that tough.
Yeah.
I'm just that tough.
Big tough.
I wasn't scared by Happy Tree Friends.
Like, yeah, I know for a fact nowadays it wouldn't freak me out because I watch more, you know, crazy shit. I watch more scary shit on the regular. I watch Manly Badass Hero. He's like, wow, there's a spooky guy. And I'm like, oh man, that is a really spooky guy. But like, you know, the song.
Yeah, Carpal Tunnel of Love, I think it's their least understandable song. Most of that is because of Pete Wentz's screaming in the bridge. This is the only song with screaming. For a while he just kind of did one song where he could do the funny scream. I'm not a fan of this one. It is also the most like Magic Boy of all of them, I think.
Yeah.
It doesn't really feel like there's a lot of commentary on their position as a band in this one. It just has lines like, we're so miserable and stunning. Like, that just feels very Magic Boy.
Yeah. It's I think that if you're interrogating it, you also kind of have to have some examples. And, you know, as a sort of, like, as a song that has some irony, but sort of, you know, is less commentary on it, I think it serves its function, but you know, I like a lot of the other stuff on the album.
Yeah,
better.
Like, I don't hate the song. I do think it's one of the weaker songs on the album, just because, I don't know, it doesn't feel impactful enough. The chorus feels too repetitive in this one, but it doesn't feel like it serves as much of a purpose as the repetition in something like Afterlife of a Party does. I don't know, like, the one-liners in this one, like, we shake the hips in relationships. So, I don't know. It doesn't hit right for me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fine. I like the bit of, like, the sun is only blinding to keep out what the clouds are hiding. I love the little conspiratorial bit there. There's some fun wordplay relating to, like, natural causes and natural things. Just nature, I guess.
Yeah.
The elements in this song, which is kind of fun, but not the biggest fan of it. I liked it when I was a kid because it made my mom mad. Next is Bang the Doldrums, which is one of my favorites on the album. Also has a banger, Miss Her Lyrics, and this is the one that Spotify got wrong.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay, so, for reference, I just to start off, I really like the way the instrumentals are done. There is this, like, sort of melodic guitar in the verses that feels very action-y. Like, it's quick, it has quick strums, it has, you know, it travels between notes really quickly, whereas, like, previous songs have had, like, whole notes, this has, like, eighth notes and 16 notes, so it feels very, very mobile, and then it goes to, like, I don't know, a more interesting, this has just, I think, more, some of the most complex rhythm guitaring on the album.
Yeah.
The chorus, though, it has some cool chord progression. I love the way he sings, like, the better off as lovers into the racing through the city. Patrick Stump has this mastery of pitch in this song that makes it really fun to sing along to, especially. But so after the chorus, there's the post-chorus. Now, here's the thing. Spotify says you're wrong. Are we all wrong? But it's like drawn out. It's like, yo ho ho wrong. Are we all wrong?
Yeah.
That is wrong.
Interesting.
On Twitter, Pete Wentz later confirmed that it is just yo ho ho whoa, a wee yo ho ho whoa, like a pirate. And this apparently was a major, like, fandom disagreement. Nobody could tell what it actually was, and those were the two main camps of, like, it's this or this. So Genius has it as yo ho ho, citing Pete Wentz's later Twitter post. Spotify has it as are we all wrong?
Yeah.
So this is Patrick Stump's, like, singing has actually led to significant fandom disagreements. This is the does Ralph dream he's a Viking of the Fall Out Boy fandom.
Oh, God.
So that's fun.
Yeah.
I love the bridge to this song, though. So it goes to sort of a more, it's not quite screaming. It's still Pete Wentz doing the sort of gravelly emo voice. And then it goes to one of just the best bridges in Fall Out Boy's discography, starting with the Cast the Spell Over the West. It has my favorite type of cymbals. It has just really interesting melody going on that travels through a bunch of emotions almost.
Nice.
Ultimately ending with sort of acceptance. It's like hopeful, loving, and then it kind of comes around because the song itself is sort of like a relationship that used to be intimate and loving has since ended as friends, and the singer wishes it could return to being a loving relationship, but the song is ultimately them getting over it.
Yeah. Which, hey, you know, in the mid-2000s, fucking banger.
Yeah.
Like, based and cool pilled.
Yeah, and so the bridge leading into the final chorus definitely has a sort of arc of, like I said, wanting to rekindle that flame despite it not working and then just coming to terms with it.
Yeah.
And I think that is expressed very well through just Patrick Stump's singing. His voice, the way he modulates it, the pitch. Banger.
Yeah.
It's a song I definitely liked as a kid, but as I came back to it as an adult, it hit me so hard. I was like, holy shit. And I think, like, the way the song plays out, it's not a complicated song structure. It is ultimately verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. But, like, the difference in tone and mood throughout the song and the way instruments are used is so interesting for what was a literal, like, top 40 radio band, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like you just don't see that much nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Imagine Dragons ain't gonna do this. Chainsmoke.
Yeah,
wait, no, they're not really a band. They're a group.
Blue Man Group wouldn't do this. Wait, hang on.
So, next up is Fame is Less Than Infamy with a little less than sign.
So this is about masturbation, right?
Sort of, yeah. I love this one. I think if I did a cover album, this would be a song I would want to cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does have the line, "When I'm home alone, I just can't stop myself."
Yeah.
I do love the kid was all right, but he went to his head.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, reference to the kids are all right, but then also, yeah. And yeah, I'm all right in bed, but I'm better with a pen. Going back to the, I can write it better than you ever felt it.
Yeah.
This sort of view that, like, they're much better as writers than as, you know, emotional connections IRL with people, or sexual connections in this case.
Yeah, yeah. It's so good. It doesn't feel self-depreciating. It feels sort of like, you know, it feels, it's funny, but also it feels intimate in a very, in a very fun and interesting way. It's an admission of limitation, but a glorification of what you can do, while also just being a good sex joke.
Yeah. I'm addicted to the way when I think of you, there's too much green to feel blue.
Yeah.
Good use of color metaphors there. Also, just like, this is a very punk song in terms of the guitar and drums, especially the bridge has sort of, it's not even a bridge, it's the final chorus has a reprise of the chorus that takes out the guitar and just has the drums doing the, like, bumpa chana, bumpa chana, bumpa chana, punk drum line.
Yeah.
And that's really fun. The bridge has this bit where it feels like it's getting lighter and happier, and then it just suddenly smash cuts back to the chorus in that case.
Yeah.
It's like, he almost escaped the routine, but he fell back. It also just has some really fun guitar in the chorus that's very syncopated.
He fell back, boy.
This would make a good ska song.
Yeah, yeah. You say that about every song.
No, I didn't. This is the first time. Next is "You're Crashing, But No, You're No Wave." This is about Fred Hampton Jr.
Hey, who's Fred Hampton Jr.?
Fred Hampton Jr. is the son of Fred Hampton, who was a Black Panthers leader in Chicago, who was assassinated. Fred Hampton Jr. was imprisoned and acquitted of murder and arson during the riots that took place after the beating and acquittal of the police officers related to Rodney King.
Yes.
And Fred Hampton Jr., everything points to him basically being framed for the charges he was given. And he was later paroled in 2001, but his sort of imprisonment, despite, you know, being innocent, more than likely, led to this song, which is a dramatic, story-driven song about a lawsuit, essentially written from the perspective of the prosecutor.
Yeah.
All of it is framed from the context of, like, the court essentially being a formality. Like, the line in the chorus is, "Case open, case shut, but you can pay to close it like a casket."
Yeah.
You know, showing that, like, yes, the verdict could ultimately end to death, but, like, it's controlled by forces outside of the law itself, by money, by the press. The role the press plays is a huge part in the lyrics of the song. The position of the lawyer, the whole, like, first verse is the attorney is too polished. He's dressed to the nines, he's practiced. He's so confident that he read the morning paper the next day to see the headlines about his case, you know. And then I love the United States versus disbelief. And then in the second verse, the second pre-chorus, there's also the too well dressed for the witness stand. Like, the whatever witness was testifying that, you know, Fred Hampton Jr. was guilty was way too like fishy of a witness to be called up.
Yeah. One, this has possibly my favorite line, at least my favorite opening line of the album, which is the DA is dressed to the nines in the mirror, he practices all his lines, specifically because, if you don't know, in when people tend to take drugs, at the very least in sort of, you know, trope-like media, you usually do cocaine on a line on a mirror.
Oh, okay.
And so, while I don't know if this is a literal direct allusion, to me that kind of reads as a sort of, as a admittance of hypocrisy, essentially, of like, you know, this is a, some, you know, this is some well-dressed, you know, like you said, it's too fancy of a prosecutor for, you know, such an obvious case, essentially, And it sort of highlights the hypocrisy even more. This also has the fucking excellent line of the press prays for whichever headline's worse.
Yeah.
Which is, you know what? I think right now that kind of rings pretty well in the year of our Lord 2023, February 18th. Recent events that I won't get into. I think that's a line that still holds up today.
Yeah. Definitely just want the money, want the controversy.
Yeah, want the attention. Gotta you know, really dig in on the controversy, not necessarily the people who it affects.
Yeah.
This is again, banger song. Love this song. Very political, and I'm always down for really objectively political songs. Especially ones that are written like poems.
Yeah. I love, again, that this is sort of, it's really the only narrative song on the album, but what a narrative.
Yeah.
That's You're Crashing, But You're No Wave. Next is the original final song of the album. So this album was released in multiple regions, and this was the first final song on the first release in America. There are other extra songs that are on the version that's on Spotify because they were added later in other regions and ultimately came back around in the deluxe edition. So I've got all this ring in my ears, but none in my fingers is it's another one of like Fall Out Boy's weird twisted relationship songs.
Yeah.
That aren't necessarily not love songs, but don't feel quite like they have the weight of a love song. You know, in this one, I mean, it's you're a canary, I'm a coal mine. You know, just however you want to work out with that, because sorrow is all the rage. For some reason, that always, well, I know what reason, that always makes me think of the mini golf episode of Gravity Falls, where they have Big Henry. I always think of that now when I hear that line. Yeah, it's pretty funny, except it's not. I do love the tell the boys where to find my body as well. But yeah, the chorus goes, the truth hurts worse than anything I could bring myself to do to you, which is interesting. It's like not saying that they would hurt you, but of the things that they can do, the truth is the worst one.
Yeah.
Whatever the truth may be, maybe infidelity, maybe that they don't love them anymore. Don't really know.
What if the truth is what they call their knife? They're like, if I stabbed you with the truth, it would hurt more than anything else I would want to do to you.
Yeah.
But that's just a theory. A music it's theory. Like,
it's not a toxic relationship, but it's also not a healthy one. And there's a lot of Fall Out Boy songs that skirt the line lyrically to deliver this sort of snarky, aloof persona.
Yeah. It's a relationship that is floundering and going to fail, but it doesn't feel like there's one specific... It feels like, obviously, it is from the perspective of, like, the band, and so you get their perspective on the situation, but it feels very much like there's always more to the story,
mm-hmm.
And we're just getting one side of it.
Yeah. So this was originally the final song. I'm not going to address the final line, but I will note that the bridge goes from what is another sort of dramatic song with like really deep booming horns into this jaunty piano bit, kind of reminds me of like You're the One That I Want.
Yeah.
In terms of it's like very quick piano strokes. He even goes a little bup 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 bup. You know, it's another one that's very musical in that regard, very theatrical or dramatic.
Yeah.
Broadway-esque perhaps. And then it ends with like a cheering, like, yay, we finished it.
Yeah.
Good job, team, we did it. I want to go to the bonus songs, though.
Yes. So I will admit, I only listened to the first bonus song,
mm-hmm.
but it's a very good bonus song, I honestly believe.
Yeah. So I only had the original printing of this, original pressing, I guess, of this CD. So I never heard either of these two songs when I was little. I actually only listened to this one at the start of this year or the end of last year.
Damn.
And I was blown away by it. It's so good.
Yeah.
So this is Gay Is Not a Synonym for Shitty, or as it is appears on the album, Gymnasts, which already great title. In an era where gay was used as sort of an insult.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, come on.
No, bro.
This is one, this is on my playlist of songs that sound like anime openings.
Yeah.
Something about the composition and the chord progression feels very, very anime-ish. I think like the way it starts in a kind of breakout where like the guitar rests a bit and lets itself sort of resonate. And then it picks back up in the next line of the first verse. And then it gets more complex into the pre-chorus when he says, like, it's not the same anymore. It changes keys to something more melancholic. The first verse is very kind of upbeat, typical major key. And then it switches to the sort of melancholy in the pre-chorus. And then the chorus continues the melancholy, but sort of drops back down to the major key towards the end.
Yeah.
This is another one that's sort of post-breakup, coming around to acceptance. Or at the very least, it is it's near the breakup.
Yeah.
It's similar to Thanks for the Memories in some regards, where it's like there has been a falling out and they are only getting around to realizing that. Or I guess it's like Bang the Doldrums. That they are coming to acceptance phase.
Yeah.
I love the chorus, the sleep with your old shirts and walk through this house in your shoes. You know, the walking in your shoes is you know, a common metaphor.
Yeah.
But I like to think this is either the trans or gender fluid anthem.
Yeah.
Where upon a girl leaving the singer, they're like, you know what? I want to wear your old shirts and walk through the house in your shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. That's my thought.
I'm down for it.
I always think the line is sleep in your old shirts, which would make it even more.
I still sleep in the giant 5XL t-shirt you got from a business meeting at your old work.
I got that from Six Flags.
Get out of here, ride operator Bane.
You remembered it correctly. I've done my job this time.
I love this is also a line, like a song that it has a lot of personal deep cuts. It's not so much like it is poetic, but it is poetic from a specific like point of view. Like some nights get so bad that I almost pick up the phone, or
it's that line in particular is changed. The first time it's you almost pick up the phone, like the singer is calling this ex,
yeah.
and is kind of relieved that the ex isn't picking up, but then it's I almost pick up the phone, like
it's showing the progression of like, you know, I'm not even reaching out anymore.
Yeah,
you know, but also like threw caution to the wind, but I've got a lousy arm.
That's a great one-liner.
So good. It's so good.
Yeah. I do love, so the chorus ends with the, it's a strange way of saying that I know I'm supposed to love you, I'm supposed to love you. The repetition to me feels like saying that out loud has caused the singer an epiphany that they are now understanding the significance of.
Yeah.
That at some point it became that they felt like they had to love this person. And when the person didn't love them back, it felt like a betrayal of some sort. But this is the singer only now realizing that they only felt that way because they were trying to follow some sort of norm or tradition, and it wasn't really what they wanted, it's just what they felt they were supposed to do.
Yeah. I would like to throw in here my reading as well, which is that I believe you can read this as a gay anthem as well, because my personal interpretation the first couple times I listened to it was, one, the line of I wear your shirt and walk through the hall in your shoes. What if, you know, if I, a cis man, am dating somebody and their shirt and shoes fits me, generally speaking, they are also a man in some way. I do like the gender fluid reading a lot.
Yeah,
that's very good. But also, the idea of I'm supposed to love you, to me, that initially read as like, essentially, like, I know that I love you, even though society says I can't, but damn it, I'm supposed to.
See, when you first said gay reading, I thought it was going to be, this is a gay man who is told they're supposed to like women, but they don't.
Ooh, I like that angle too, yeah. I think that the initial rating doesn't stand up to as much scrutiny, but I do like that idea too, that like this is you know, somebody in the closet who's sort of like trying to force themselves to love a woman, and they just sort of like realize I can't. So that's not who I am.
So that was the second of the final songs on the album. Yeah. Now for the third final song and final song. It's hard to say I do when I don't. I don't really like this one.
I'm glad I didn't listen to it.
It's essentially, the framing is it's a stick up. It's like putting someone at gunpoint in it, like the line is put your hands in the air and don't make a sound. And it's like, you know, it's sort of like they have the audience hostage, that the audience is forced to dance along or feel emotions that the band is forcing upon them.
Yeah.
It's put your hands in the air like you don't care, except it presents that the first time, and it does this sort of joke of like, you thought it was going to be put your hands in the air and wave them around. It's actually a stick up.
Yeah.
And then he says, but don't get the wrong idea. We're going to shoot you. We're going to shoot you. And there's nothing in your head or pocket, throat, or wallet that could change just how this goes. Like, it feels like it would have been fine with just the first part, but then he does the, we're gonna shoot you. And the fact that it doesn't rhyme means that it stands out more, which brings more attention to the just, we're gonna shoot you. And I'm like, this, it feels like this was made for, like, a Call of Duty game. Like, it feels like a licensed song. It doesn't feel like... It doesn't feel like it has the same emotional through line as the rest of the songs on the album.
It feels like a line that's going too far with the metaphor.
Yeah.
A lot of the other metaphors, like, they have those obvious allusions, but like they sort of leave you to fill in the gaps. That one feels more like sort of, you know, it gets the aha of like, put your hands in the air and then leave them there. But, you know, I guess it's trying to make a point about like, we're going to disappoint you no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think that's messier than a lot of the other songs on the album.
And then eventually it also says, the second time the chorus comes around, he says, everyone shakes to the beat with a barrel down their throat. Like, come on, dude.
I actually kind of like that though. I don't think it's a, I, without having listened to it, I don't think that's a, that wouldn't break my top five of, like, songs about how popular music sucks. Slave to the Radio is definitely the prime example there. Sylvanesso, wonderful band. Check that one song out. That's the only thing I've heard of them.
Repeat stuff.
Anyway.
Yeah. This song is also interesting because it sounds like a leftover song from Take This to Your Grave. Like, the rhythm and the pitch of it and sort of the way the lyrics play out, the way the melody, the like, vocal melody goes, it feels like their early stuff.
Yeah.
And it feels really out of place from the rest of the album. Now, before I go into the final line of the album, I really want to just point out the album structure is really good. I think this is sort of what makes a pop album from, like, a good album as a whole is the order of the songs could really make or break an album.
Yeah.
I already mentioned how Golden acts as sort of a midway point that is low and sad, like the second act of a three-act symphony, or is the down point of the story in the hero's journey, and how Hum Hallelujah is the descent and Thanks for the Memories is the ascent, even, you know, the lyrics mentioning sort of rising. And that part's really cool. The first half has a lot of these positive songs, like I'm Like a Lawyer and Hum Hallelujah. And then the second half brings in the drama with, like, Bang the Doldrums. That's not really drama, but I guess Fame and Infamy and You're Crashing But You're in a Wave are very dramatic songs in terms of, like, music composition and lyrics.
Yeah.
I love Gay Is Not a Synonym for Shitty, but I feel like it doesn't fit anywhere on the album.
Yeah.
Because, like, here's sort of the thing, is it feels too final to be early in the album, but it feels too upbeat to be in the later half. It's not quiet enough to be in the middle. And I've Got All This Ringing in My Ears But None in My Fingers is the perfect finale.
Yeah.
It has the, like, crowd cheering. It has the final, like, dramatic horns going into the piano. Like, it works so well as a final song that I feel like Gay Is Not a Synonym for Shitty just doesn't have a good spot to go.
Gnaspus is a kind of quintessential bonus song.
Isn't that where St. Peter came from?
Yeah, St. Peter of Gnaspus, of course. Gnaspus is actually my my nobody name.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a great song. I just really wanted to get that out, that I feel like I don't know where I would put it if I had it in this in the album from the start. Maybe just like right after You're Crashing as a penultimate song. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, so the final line of the album. I've been teasing this for so long. Now press repeat in the fucking old ass text to speech sound. Really this good. Really scared me when I was a kid. Happy Tree Friends? Fine. Impervious. Now press repeat? Fucked me up. I did not want to listen to the end of this album because I was afraid of that line. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
fair. I mean,
fair.
As like kids, we never really listened to the end of albums. We would always just play it from the start or only play the hits.
Yeah.
And sometimes I would dig through the album when I was making like mix CDs. But yeah, just that line is so surprising out of nowhere. It comes after a bit of silence even. So it's kind of like a secret track, but it's not. And yeah, it's a robot going like, no, press repeat. And this is, I think, the reason I wanted to talk about this album. Not only because it's, you know, top three favorite albums, but because I legitimately think the album as a whole has meaning that a lot of people don't talk about. So, Infinity on High. I want to note first that the album cover is like a bedroom. You know, it has like a closet or a doorway in the back. The walls are painted. You can very clearly see the roof sort of steepling. And then it has a sheep with like wings grafted onto it. It looks almost like a taxidermied sheep. I'm not sure. It's probably just some sort of visual collage, but it has like a moon painted on the wall or hanging from the ceiling. And yeah, the sheep has wings, like white big wings.
Yeah.
Obvious religious theming in that image.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obvious. Yeah. Like metaphor. It's the Lamb of God. It's an angel. It's also crafted in this like theater set. It is religion in religious themes, but it is still artifice put onto a CD cover.
It's also interesting, of course, that a lot of times Satan is typically depicted as like a ram, mm-hmm. or you know, usually more a goat, but like still along that same lines.
So I always took the album name Infinity on High in the Lord I Lift Your Name on High sense.
Yeah.
That on high is referring to heaven, and Infinity on High is like an afterlife in heaven. There's a lot of references to the afterlife between, you know, Golden referencing God. There's the afterlife of a party, the literal song. There's the road to hell in Hum Hallelujah. Oh, and there's the plus one at the afterlife in Thriller. I want to say there's a reference in Thanks for the Memories as well.
Thanks for the Memories is a song that sounds very hellish, rather.
Kind of, yeah. In Golden sort of is the perspective of a villain who's damned to hell.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, the amount of religious symbolism, which again is mostly relegated to this album. It doesn't really come up later in their other albums, and it feels maybe that is the perspective of them under the, you know, the new fame. It's like, have they died and gone to heaven and this is heaven? Is this hell, actually? Is their punishment to be criticized and scrutinized by tabloids now that they're famous?
Yeah.
It's sort of like the death of their private persona as they have now had their public persona become so huge.
Yeah.
So also, though, I realized something really dumb, that when you talk about a number on high, that's microwave instructions.
This is the little bit that I was saw in your notes, and I was like, okay, we'll see where this goes.
Yeah. So it's microwave instructions, and Infinity on High is like, you're constantly being cooked. Again, it's the flashbulb cameras, the flash photography, is a spotlight put on them now that they are famous, and it feels like they're constantly being burned and cooked.
Yeah.
There's that much pressure. And, you know, even if it's tasty food, it's never going to be eaten because it's constantly being microwaved.
Yeah.
It's just going to end burnt. Like in hell.
Like in hell!
Okay, but here's the fucked up part, okay? You know what happens in a microwave? There's a turntable that spins.
Yeah, all right, all right.
Now press repeat is a command to the listener to repeat the album such to continue the revolutions of the CD. The microwave is literally, instead of the turntable of the microwave, it's the CD spinning, releasing their emotions and thoughts outward to be consumed by somebody else.
Yeah.
It is a prepackaged meal that somebody, like, then heats back up in their home. But to fully move past it requires ending the cooking period.
Yeah.
So to leave it on high for infinity means you're always cooking it, never really letting it go away, always just in your house. So the infinity on high is performed by pressing repeat, and that's why there's the robot telling you to now press repeat in a way that sounds like a subliminal message. This was around the time Lost was on, and Lost had a bit where the Dharma Initiative had subliminal messages and the weird robot voice.
Nice. Because a consistent theme of the album is sort of like, you know, the pop star boy band, essentially, like the alt rock boy band, suddenly becoming great and suddenly being forced to put something out, put out more emotion, put out more and more and more. It really tracks with that style, with this specific angle of viewing the album as a whole, as sort of like, literally sort of, you know, in listening to this album and in replaying this album, cough cough radios, you are kind of burning them, you are damning them, you are, you know, you are acting somewhat complicitly.
Yeah.
From an artistic standpoint, of course, not in literally.
There's also something to be said of, like, when you release something, especially something as personal as a song written about yourself or from your perspective, you kind of go through a death of the author.
Yeah.
In that the afterlife in this case is the release of the product.
Yeah.
Where the author no longer can change the words. The words themselves are dead in that they cannot move or grow. That by repeating the album over and over again, you're kind of playing these dead words without any regard for their current relativeness or their current relatability, how true they are nowadays.
Yeah.
And also, so the Fix Me in 45 in Thriller relates to this as well. I mentioned that a 45 is like a 45-inch LP. You mentioned that the original album was around 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But if you repeat it constantly, it's never going to reach that fixed status.
Ah.
That if the goal is to fix them in 45, you are just extending it, whether it's endless therapy sessions or an endless playthrough of an album from somebody who's going through some stuff.
You're just spinning your wheels.
You're just repeating the sort of the, not negativity, but the misery, I guess.
Yeah. It's
the album is weirdly conceptual for a pop punk album.
Yeah. There's a, I'm going to say meta narrative in the literal, like, sense of meta being outside of the text.
Yeah.
But there's a meta narrative of, like, essentially the message that at some point you will have to put it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like the, a lot of the songs explore that because a lot of the songs are like, you know, we could be put down because fans stop listening. We could be put down because we literally die. We could just stop making music at some point. And so, you know, all bands eventually end. All music eventually has to end, and that's what makes it beautiful, TM. But like, you know, it's both a lament and a celebration, and it sort of leaves you with a message of like, you know, you can always come back, but don't linger too long when you do.
Yeah. Again, like, I think there is this perspective of pop punk being just a bunch of sad magic boys who are, you know, selling themselves to, like, teenage girls and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, while that's kind of true, I think, like, this album, like I said, is a very conceptual album, at least under this lens.
Yeah.
I only really started viewing it this way because I was so bothered by Now Press Repeat. I was so, like, scared of it, and it consumed me so much that I was like, okay, there has to be a reason.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that kind of just went over people. Like, this album, it deserves to be looked at in the same way, like, Revolver does. Like, this is, in my opinion, a really, really top-tier album because not only is it representative of its genre, and it's really well-written and all this, but, like, it has a purpose, it has a point beyond just being a collection of pop songs. It's sort of like how American Idiot had all these radio hits, but that kind of overshadowed the album as a whole when the album was written to be a rock opera.
Yeah.
I think similarly, there's a lot of interesting elements to listening to Infinity on High as a whole that are overshadowed by things like Thanks for the Memories and This Ain't a Scene.
Yeah. Something that I thought about quite a bit while listening to this album as well is that I think that a lot of Zillennials, specifically sort of like, you know, the much younger Millennials and the older Zoomers that at least I sort of fit into and you kind of fit into as well. You're technically a Zoomer, but like you're
I'm Millennium Z.
Yeah, we're both on the precipice of both. And so like, I think what a lot of us don't realize is how young 40 is. Now, like, I will specifically say that 40 is old when I am making a point. I believe that 40 is both young and old. Age is a number that's complicated.
Well, don't say that.
I said age is a number that's complicated. That's a value-neutral thing.
That's one sentence. It's not two sentences with a period.
Yeah. But when I talk about things like, you know, people making articles about millennials being entitled, I will bring up millennials are 40, you know. Millennials are not entitled because they're 40 and want a stable job. But at the same time, if you were, you know, if you were born in like 1989 or, you know, 1980, just if you were born in 1980, you were
way before Nirvana.
Yeah, way before Nirvana. There was U2 and Blondie. If you were born on 1980, that means you were 21 when 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, if you are around our age, consider yourself at 21 versus now. Like, I am 26, almost 27, and I consider my 20 to 21 year old self really young, like really inexperienced. And so, you know, like, you know, the band was about that age when this came out. And so, you know, to have a lot of that pressure while being technically an adult, but still very much figuring things out, I think sort of, you know, sure they're crying all the way to the bank, but that is still sort of like a really unique pressure to be under, a really unique situation that, like, I don't know that I personally would have handled as well.
Yeah, I mean, Pete Wentz really didn't. I didn't want to go into it too much because it's not super present in this album, but he has had, like, drug problems in the past.
Yeah.
A lot of things that are very, like, content warning.
Yeah.
And that has appeared in Corktree, and it appears again in Foliadu. But yeah, so they really didn't handle this that well, all things considered. They're alive, though.
Yeah.
And that's really good. Pete Wentz seems to be doing all right nowadays. And the band is, you know, doing all right.
Patrick Stump still can't enunciate.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We're going down, down, now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's the stress of it is very much something that I think comes through in the album in both a positive way, but also sort of like in the same way of, you know, a big point of this is sort of that they aren't happy. They're trying to make you happy and they're trying to make themselves happy. But, you know, none of us are exactly there yet.
Mm-hmm. You know what else gets really hot and rotates infinitely? The Earth.
Yeah. Today's episode is sponsored by climate change.
Sponsored by climate change? No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, overall, 3 out of 10, good album. Not as good as Since I Left You. I give it a light 7 out of 10. No, yeah. I love this album. There's not much else to say. It's a fantastic album. Honestly, the two albums on either side of it are also very good. Not a huge fan of most of the rest of their discography, despite being a big Fall Out Boy fan.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's how a lot of people around my age are with the band. They're like, oh yeah, Corktree is great. Infinity on High is great. Foliadu is fine. Save Rock and Roll is eh. And then it just gets worse.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, what about Take Me to Your Grave? What?
What's that? Yeah.
That's
the
side one Flip Me Over album. I don't know any of the other songs on it. it said, I know I'm not your favorite record. They were at least self-aware back then.
Yeah. Yeah, Fully Do is probably one we could also talk about at some point in the future.
For longtime fans, that was in the Matthew Marissa's iPhone yes. library.
Yeah, so a number of albums, a number of albums I have specifically because Marissa had them on their laptop.
On my iTunes
library. On your iTunes library. And I
because
had to borrow,
I owned them on iTunes.
Yeah, and I had to borrow your laptop at one point for school. And, you know, like, at that point, iTunes had the ability to just rip the MP3s off of them. Yeah. I don't know if they still have that ability.
Well, you just sync your iTunes library with mine because you didn't have an iTunes.
That's the thing, though. I didn't. I got the MP3
files.
You got
the MP3? How do you get MP3s? I thought they only did MP4s.
I don't know.
I thought they only did the proprietary Apple "you can't steal this" file format.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I have the MP3s and I still have them, like, on my computer, or at least my Google Drive. Yeah. I literally the version of Cake's Comfort Eagle that I have on my phone right now is the version from your computer.
That's great.
Years ago.
Yeah, so among these albums were Comfort Eagle, Fully I Do,
Streetlight Manifesto,
The Hands That Thieve. Which is my favorite album of all time.
Wait, no, it's not Hands That Thieve.
No,
it's
it is.
Oh, it is?
Oh, I had both Hands That Thieve and Everything Goes Numb. Or Everything, yeah.
Everything Goes Numb is the one that I had.
Okay, well, I had both of them on iTunes. The Else and Join Us by They Might Be Giants, which are probably my two favorite to listen to. Also Nanobots by They Might Be Giants. I really liked They Might Be Giants when I was in high school.
Yeah, yeah.
Jonathan
Colton's,
Best Of,
Best
Greatest
of.
Hits. Let's see. I also probably had Unhappy Refrain and, what is it called? I gotta look this up. It's Team Nekokan's, like, original music album that has nothing to do with Mega Man, and it's not the one with Slip Heat on it. If you know, you know. The Suburbs by Arcade Fire, Endless Fantasy by Onomatakuchi, AM by Arctic Monkeys. This was a time capsule in terms of my tastes in high school. Worlds by Porter Robinson, 4 fucking Savant albums. Mayanichi Ga Every Day, that's what I thought it was. I'm still very pissed, by the way, at Unhappy Refrain being off iTunes. That's for another day. Yeah, that's just sort of, we could talk about most of those and it would be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of those are the ones that we have real, at least, you know, we both have some tangible history with to some extent.
Yeah. Anyway, so as a last bit, what do you think is the least intelligible song on the album?
Ooh, I'm going to go with It's Hard to Say I Do When I Don't because I didn't listen to it.
No, in all honesty, though.
Okay.
Because I already said mine.
I honestly think, yeah, it's Afterlife of the Party. The, like, second verse I had to re-listen to a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, you know, singing songs that could only catch the ear of the desperate.
Yeah, which, you know, sure, fittingly enough.
Nose Runs Ruby Red, Death's in a Double Bed. Did he predict Ruby? No, I would give it to either
it to
Carpal Tunnel of Love or Thriller. Bonnie is my dog, by the way. She's great. Carpal Tunnel of Love has, like, the low pass filter on the vocals that also complicates things, whereas Thriller is just, he kind of just slurs his speech.
Fair. I think Thriller would be higher up if it wasn't the first one, and so I kind of, like, when I couldn't really figure it out, I immediately started looking at the lyrics.
Yeah, Thriller, the chorus especially, the, like, cry on the couch, all the poets come to life. Nobody knew that one.
Yeah.
Cry all the cats, all the parrots come to life? All the pirates come to life?
Fix Me in 45, I originally thought was, like, Teach Me in 45, I think.
I knew Fix Me in 45 from when I was wee little.
I was a wee lad.
Also thought it was Car Crash Honks.
Long live the Car Crash Honks. Hey!
You know, the honks right before the car crash.
Ah, that's pretty good, actually.
I also didn't even mention one of my favorite lines on the album, which is crashing not like hips or cars, but more like parties.
Nice.
Off This Ain't a Sane. I thought it said crashing not like hipster cars, which is also funny. Like, damn, those hipster cars suck ass.
Goddamn hipster cars. I drive a Maserati. I don't know what hipsters drive.
I guess nowadays, hipsters drive. They don't.
Yeah. I guess nowadays, technically,
they drive like an Oldsmobile?
Yeah. I drive a Ford One, the first car that Ford made. I guess nowadays, hipsters, well, hipsters slash derogatory drive Teslas.
I don't want to think about that.
Yeah. It's hipster, did hipster culture kind of just morph into, like, tech bro culture?
Yeah. Especially because all the hipsters, lived in Seattle.
Yeah.
In San Francisco.
And no. were white.
Yeah. yeah. God. Anyways, we're in the disintegration stage, so it's time to wrap this up. Yeah. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. We'd love any feedback. Also, let us know if there's anything you want us to cover or otherwise just check out, things we might be interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at NetSurferPro. Where we talk about, where we post tweets about our upcoming episodes in the form of little teasers. We do have a few episodes planned coming soon, so there will be some new teasers coming up with this episode. You can also follow me on Twitter at Twakaroo, Twakaroo, where I tweet my takes and updates on projects I'm working on. And I also tweet when I go live at Twitch, at twitch.tv/twak. I stream weekdays, and I've been streaming Hi-Fi Rush. It's a really good game. I've also been streaming a lot of Hitman Freelancer, because that came out, and that's really fun. Otherwise, I stream a lot of roguelites, competitive games, and some single-player games here and there. The next single-player game going to be Pikmin 2. Very similar titles.
Good evening, 47. Your target this week is a Duracell battery.
Your target is the burrowing snaggrit, a bird capable of burrowing down into the earth. There's actually 3 or 4 of them that you'll have to kill. It's not the same one, though it looks like it's the same one. Trust me, it's more annoying than that.
He chokes out a Bulborb and then puts it on his head as his disguise. Hey, where can they find me, though?
I don't know.
Oh, right. Yeah. Sorry. I have to do my own callouts. You can find me on Twitter and on TikTok, mostly TikTok, at Galen Wilson. That's at GalenWLS0N. I post my hot takes and videos on things. I'm trying to do more little things about, like, video games I like, or, you know, just random thoughts about internet. I'm trying to get NetSurfer Pro to be sort of a hashtag that we can use more regularly. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, where I'll probably have a video one of these days. But more importantly, you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire, where I think I might be playing Civ a bit more, honestly. I know that Matthew wanted me to sort of stream to show how I play.
Because it takes forever.
Yeah, yeah. And I started doing that, and I was like, this is actually a really fun thing to do. I like sort of sitting there and explaining my thought process. But yeah.
So it's like your version of Civ. You have to right click command your workers.
Yeah, yeah. I
not like the soldiers, but like the individual civilians.
I micromanage the shit out of Civ. I love it. It's really fun.
Yeah.
But yeah. You can also find me on Tumblr at Galen Wilson. I do Tumblr things there sometimes.
Yeah.
Aside from that.
Also, I didn't even mention the fun fact, which is that Fallout Boy is named after the Simpsons character, Fallout Boy.
Oh, yeah.
No band named after the Simpsons is bad.